Good evening, everybody. Christina will be offering the Dhamma talk this evening. And I'll begin with you chanting the refuges and the precepts. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma Sambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami, Dhammam saranam gacchami, Sangham saranam gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami, Dutiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami. Panatipata veramni sikapadam samadhiyami. Adina dana veramni sikapadam samadhiyami. Avrakmacharya veramni sikapadam samadhiyami. Musawada veramani sikapadam samadhiyami. Sura maraya majapamadatana veramani sikapadam samadhiyami. Vikala bhojana veramani sikapadam samadhiyami. Nacha Gita Wadita Visukadasana Malaganda Vilepana Dharana Mandana Vipusanatana Veramni Sikapadam Samadhiyami. Uchasayana Mahasayana Veramni Sikapadam Samadhi ami. Idam me silam maga palanyanasa pachayo o tu.
I just want to check the sound level. Is it okay? Good. Great. So tonight I want to offer a talk about the second foundation of mindfulness called mindfulness of Vedana, or feeling tone as it's often translated into English. And the fact that the Buddha devoted a whole separate foundation to Vedana speaks to how important I think he considered it. And it actually turns out that Vedana is a really central mental process in the teachings about suffering and the end of suffering, which we're going to explore together tonight. So Vedana, or feeling tones, can best be described as the hedonic quality of all of our experiences, ranging from very pleasant to neither pleasant nor unpleasant, often called neutral, to very, very unpleasant. calling it feeling tones can sometimes confuse it with emotions like anger, fear, shame, and sadness. And while these emotions definitely have qualities of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral co-arising with them, Vedana is actually much more basic or fundamental than emotions are. One could say that Vedana is the particular taste of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral accompanying every single experience that we have. So sitting here tonight in your chairs or on your sofa or on your cushion after a long day of practice, you might be noticing a pleasant feeling of relaxation in your body. Or maybe there is an unpleasant sense of pressure or heat somewhere in your body. Or maybe the body just feels overall quiet and neutral as you tune into it right now. So maybe just an invitation for you to, in this moment, check out what's the predominant quality of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral in your body in this moment. So these are all feeling tone qualities of our experience. Maybe an unpleasant ache in the shoulder, a pleasant warmth in your hands, or maybe a neutral pressure of sit bones on the chair. So as we track these Vedana in the body, these feeling tones, we may not be aware that Vedana is actually a quality of mind, meaning that Vedana is not inherent in the objects that we perceive. So the pleasantness we feel when we see a flower or someone smiling at us in a grocery shop is not really located in the flower or in the smile. And in a similar way, the unpleasantness we feel with a smelly garbage bag or with the sensations of heat and pulsing in the body is not really located in the garbage bag or in the body. The particular feeling tone that we experience arises from the coming together of an object and the knowing of an object. The eye sees a flower, and in that coming together of eye and flower, there is the arising of what the Buddha called eye door consciousness. So for today, I brought a flower for us. So we can all make contact, letting your eyes connect with the sight of the flower and notice for yourself what is the arising feeling tone that's coming from seeing the flower. And whether the coming together of flower and eye gives rise to pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral all depends on the previous conditions leading up to that particular moment of eye and flower meeting each other. So all our previous histories and interactions with flowers, as well as the particular condition of the mind in the moment of eye and flower making contact. So this is why we say that Vedana is an experience of the mind. And like anything else that we experience through our six sense doors, it is impermanent and it is conditional. Each feeling tone arising and passing out of its own causes and conditions. So although the experience of feeling tone in this way is very subjective, we often take for granted that feeling tone is inherent in the object. So when we look at this flower I just showed you, we may think that we're actually perceiving some deep inner pleasant quality in the flower itself. The flower has the pleasantness. And most of us tend to experience the sight of a flower as pleasant, and so it can be hard for us to truly understand that the pleasantness we feel is not really in the flower, but it's in our own minds. And this in part is how we get in trouble with Vedana. So again, when the eye meets a flower and there is the arising of pleasant, we quickly attribute the pleasant that is happening in the mind to the flower itself. And this likely sets off a cycle of craving for sights of more flowers. I know it just did for me. I went and got some more flowers. But with more careful attention, we see that Vedana, feeling tone, is an aspect of mind, and we see for ourselves that it changes over time due to causes and conditions. So this became really clear to me one time when I was driving home from a silent retreat. So as I was driving down the highway, I became aware that I was hypnotically fascinated and drawn in by the black smoke coming from the car in front of me. It was so fascinating to watch that smoke, so incredibly beautiful and so pleasant to watch it. And then at some point, I became aware that what I was so fascinated by was called exhaust smoke. And in the moment I named it exhaust, all the pleasant vanished, totally vanished from one moment to the next. And I now perceived it as very unpleasant, polluting smoke. So this is a way that feeling tone shifts and changes depending on our perceptions and our current state of mind. Another example of how changeable the experience of Vedana can be is noticing pain sensations in the body. For example, in the shoulder area. I know some of you have talked about this in your interviews. So these sensations most likely give rise to unpleasant Vedana. Yet when we with mindfulness come a little bit closer to the actual sensations, there might be heat, pulsing, pressure, and we see that they're quickly fluctuating and shifting from moment to moment to moment. And within this fluctuation, we see that the experience of what we call shoulder pain, actually consists of tiny little moments of both pleasant and neutral Vedana, and most likely even tiny moments of pleasant Vedana. Although we may not be aware of this. So it's all arising and passing very quickly, not solid at all. Yet most often we know an experience in a more solid way, for example, as pain in the shoulder. So as we have explored, Vedana arises in the contact between one of the six sense doors and a sense object. It is in the coming together of the sense door and the object that there is a moment of consciousness, which then give rise to feeling tone. The Buddha talked about this contact point as two fire sticks rubbing together to produce a fire, Vedana. So there is Vedana arising in the contact between the eye door and sights, between the ear door and sounds, between the nose door and smells, between the tongue door and taste, between the body door and sensations. And there is also Vedana arising between the mind door and mind objects. For example, a mind object could be a thought, a memory, a plan, an emotion. And all of these mental objects also give rise to feeling tones. For example, for someone who might be very analytically oriented, the process of discursive thinking itself might be extremely pleasant. Thinking, 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 pleasant, 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 lots of delight in thinking. And then for others that might be more emotionally oriented, experiencing the flow of emotions may be very pleasant, perhaps giving rise to a feeling of aliveness and creativity. So as mentioned, Vedana is central in our understanding of both suffering and freedom from suffering. As we have seen, feeling tones are not fixed, and they may change over time with our perception and interpretation of the situation and the particular conditions of the mind in the moment of sense door contact. Yet by the time unpleasant, pleasant, or neutral Vedana do arise in our minds, the cause for that particular arising is already in the past. For example, if you're having unpleasant fatigue in this moment, it may be caused partly by poor sleep last night. So the causes and conditions for this moment of fatigue, unpleasant fatigue, is already in the past. Or unpleasant tension and pressure in this moment may be caused by too much straining of the mind in meditation earlier today. The causes and conditions for tension in this moment is already in the past. So there really is nothing we can do about an unpleasant experience at the time it is arising, other than to be mindful of it, knowing it with mindfulness. And of course, like any other experience we have, we can know that it is impermanent and that it arose out of its own causes and conditions, some of them known to us and some of them unknown to us. So with this gradual training we're engaged in here, we learn to understand and work with the conditions of the mind. And this greater understanding is itself a condition for the arising of greater neutrality overall. And this can be peaceful compared to the extremes of very pleasant to very unpleasant. When that is said, it's really important for us to understand that pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral Vedana is given for all of us. It comes along with being a human and with having six sense doors. So we're all going to be experiencing these feeling tones. As the Buddha pointed to in many of his teachings, deep freedom of heart and mind is not about having only pleasant Vedana or having an absence of Vedana. Rather, it's in the mindful relationship with Vedana. So before we further explore this potential of bringing mindfulness to Vedana, I'd like us to explore the relationship between Vedana, reactivity, and suffering. So feeling tones and habitual reactions to feeling tones often seem to be one and the same. When we experience feeling tone at any of the six sense doors, most often there is an immediate reactivity arising with that feeling tone. With unpleasant, there's often an immediate sense of not liking, aversion. With pleasant, there's often an immediate liking, craving. And with neutral, there's often an immediate disinterest, boredom, tuning out. So these are all reactions to feeling tones. Yet in our lived experience, feeling tone and reactivity often seem to be one and the same. They can be really hard to tease them apart. So I often notice this pattern of reactivity when I walk along the ocean here where I live. Often I see little seals sticking their heads out of the water. And there's an immediate liking of that sight. And rather than just being fully present with the pleasantness of the sight I'm seeing, I notice that my eyes are right away searching the surface of the water for more seals. Hungry eyes moving over the surface of the water, scanning, looking, searching for seals. Where are those cute seals? I just immediately want more of them right away. So here's an example of how pleasant and craving are so closely linked that it can be really hard to tell the difference. The pleasant side of the seals almost automatically turns into thirst for more seals, scanning, looking, and searching. Our initial reactivity to feeling tone often sparks further reactive patterns in the mind. For example, with some unpleasant sound being known in our meditation practice, we may try to first move away from the sound, sit in another room, close the door, close the window, or if we think someone else is responsible for the sound, for example, a family member, we may ask them to stop being so noisy. We may then feel an irritation in the mind and respond to this by trying to get rid of what is unpleasant to us. Again, believing that the source of the unpleasant we feel is in the sound itself. Maybe we start having a long, agitated inner dialogue about how annoying the situation is, how it's disturbing our practice, and how much we need it to stop right now in this moment, and how we will make sure that it won't ever happen to us again in the future. We'll make other arrangements so we won't ever have to be meditating with noise. Another strategy we often use is trying to get rid of unpleasant by looking for pleasant. So what we're doing here is that we're basically trying to switch out an unpleasant experience for a pleasant one. So in our formal sitting, there may be unpleasant Vedana arising within the body door, some form of painful sensation. aversion and reactivity may arise. So we may move around as a response. We may start to wonder when the sitting is over, when it's going to end. And as aversion keeps building, we may start to dream about the nice cup of tea or the nice lunch we will have later on when this sitting is finally over. And then in that thinking about the food or the lunch, we start to remember how much we like a particular food that we will have for lunch. And then we start planning a very nice dinner we will cook for friends that are coming over in a few weeks. And quickly, we're off into a pleasant fantasy for the next 10 minutes, 20 minutes. All of this started with a very simple, unpleasant feeling tone arising within a particular body sensation. And next, we're way off into a big story about a dinner party. This big story is what the Buddha called papancha, or proliferation of mind. Papancha, proliferation of mind. It means the tendency of mind to proliferate, to think a lot about what is happening, rather than being present with our here and now experience. In the sutta called the Honeyball Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, the Buddha describes the sequence of events very clearly. He says, dependent on the eye and forms, eye consciousness arise. The meeting of the three is contact. With contact as condition, there is feeling. And what one feels that one perceives and thinks about. What one thinks about that one mentally proliferates. With what one has mentally proliferated as the source, perceptions and notions tinged by mental proliferation beset a person with respect to the past, future, and present forms cognizable through the eye. So here we have the chain of events starting with the simple meeting of eye and form, leading to complex proliferation of thought, which then conditions how we further perceive our moment-to-moment experience. We probably all are familiar with this pattern. With neutral feeling tone, the habitual response is often one of tuning out. Sometimes it can be known as boredom. We feel bored. We feel disinterested in what we're paying attention to. In our meditations, we may know this form of reactivity as drowsiness, spaciness, floatiness. And sometimes a stretch of boredom even leads us to stir up some big inner drama. Maybe some big unpleasant story about the past that can wake us up from feeling bored. Maybe we can think about how upset we are about a past argument with a family member. This might get the blood pumping and the energy rising in the body. So although the story about the family member in itself might give rise to unpleasant vedana, the coming out of neutrality and boredom and into more wakefulness may have its own strange pleasantness associated with it. And all of this to avoid the neutrality giving rise to boredom. I think neutral in some ways may be much harder for many people to be with compared to the unpleasantness associated with some form of stress. And so there's a constant looking for more stimulation, more drama, more excitement, all of this to escape neutral experience. With this gradual training in sila, samadhi, and panya, we become disenchanted with the excitement of drama. And we start to deeply value the potential peace associated with more neutral vedana. So these responses to feeling tones are very deep and very, very habitual. As fellow human beings, we all share these responses. And as the Buddha pointed to, these shared reactive patterns are really part of the cause of our shared suffering, our shared dukkha. In the well-known sutta called the Dart Sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, The Buddha clearly describes this connection between reactivity and suffering. So I'm going to read a little bit of this. It's a long sutta. He says, when touched with painful vedana, an ordinary person, probably meaning us most of the time, experience sorrow, grief, and lamentation, beat their chest and become distraught. So they feel two pains, a physical and a mental pain, just as if a person was shot with an arrow and right afterward they were shot with another one, so that they would feel the pain of two arrows. In the same way, when touched with painful vedana, an ordinary person grieves, lament, beat their chest, and become distraught, so they feel two pains, physical and mental. So this is a really famous teaching about the first and second arrow. Many of you have probably heard this sutta before. Sometimes we can think about the first arrow as the unavoidable pain level of our experience, of our existence. There is really this unavoidable, unpleasant vedana associated with being in human form, having this fragile human body, this fragile human mind, and this fragile human heart. We grow sick, we age, we die, we lose what we love, and we lose those that we love. And this often gives rise to unpleasant vedana. And this is the first start, the unavoidable pain connected with being embodied. Yet there's also the suffering level, the second dart, this reactivity to feeling tone that the Buddha tells us is optional. As many of us know, often there are many more darts than a second one. There may be 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, I don't know how many darts. So as we previously explored in an example with the sound, the unpleasant sound is the first arrow, leading to trying to get rid of it, second arrow, leading to angry inner dialogue, third arrow, leading to many thoughts about how we will avoid noise in the future, fourth arrow, leading to self-judgment about being a bad meditator, fifth arrow, leading to hopelessness and despair about our practice, sixth arrows. So here we see arrows being shot upon arrows. And often we get really entangled in these suffering states, and we don't even see that they started with a simple unpleasant sound being known at the ear door. So it is clear from the sutta that suffering arises with the shooting of the additional arrows. And it's also clear that freedom is not about having only pleasant vedana or getting rid of unpleasant vedana. In fact, the Dart Sutta, the Buddha in fact describes how a noble disciple, meaning a deep practitioner with some level of spiritual wisdom, will have the exact same vedana as an ordinary person, yet with a very different response. So here's just another little piece of this sutta. The Buddha says, having been touched by painful vedana, a noble one do not resist it. Hence, in them, no underlying tendency of resistance against painful vedana comes to underline their mind. So this is the aversion against unpleasant vedana. Under the impact of painful vedana, they do not yearn for sensual happiness. And why not? Well-taught noble disciples know of an escape from painful vedana other than yearning for sensual pleasure. They know, as it actually is present, the arising and the ending of these vedana, and the gratification, the danger, and the escape connected with these vedana. So we'll talk a little bit more about that last piece. So it seems that there is an escape from suffering and that the escape is in seeing Vedana with wisdom. Seeing that Vedana arise and pass like anything else in our conditioned experience. And with that, also seeing that pleasant Vedana certainly can offer some gratification. We're not denying that there's some gratification in having pleasant Vedana. Yet the gratification will always be limited and unreliable due to the impermanent nature of Vedana. So not shooting the second arrow has to do with mindfully seeing them for what they are without getting involved, as Marcia often says. Don't get involved, she says. This is also the basic instruction offered by the Buddha in the second foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of Vedana, where he says, when experiencing a pleasant feeling tone, one knows, I experience a pleasant feeling tone. When experiencing a painful feeling, one knows, I experience a painful feeling. When experience a neither pleasant nor painful feeling, one knows, I experience a neither pleasant nor painful feeling. So we are invited by the Buddha to practice right here, right with the coming and the going of Vedana within our own lived experience from moment to moment to moment to moment. Not adding anything and not rejecting anything. Simply being open to and curious about these hedonic tone arising with any of our sense door experiences. Maybe asking ourselves, is this pleasant? Is this unpleasant? Is this neutral? How do I actually know this particular feeling tone? What does pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feel like to me? And what sense door is the feeling tone arising with? Is the pleasantness arising with a sight I'm seeing? Is it arising with a thought I'm having? Is it arising with the cup of tea I'm drinking? And how long does a particular feeling tone stay at that same intensity? For example, does the intense pleasant feeling arising with the first bite of food stay the same, or does it change as we keep chewing our food or as we keep eating? There might be an initial hit of pleasant, and then as you eat more, there might be a shift in this. So the body door is a really great place for us to start getting to know and become acquainted with feeling tone. As we tune into the breath and body sensations, we may also begin to notice the associated feeling tones arising with these sensations. Staying present with body sensations and the associated feeling tones is very helpful in seeing the impermanent nature of Vedana. Whether it is an unpleasant, neutral, or pleasant body sensation we are experiencing, we can see that it changes and transforms right here as we stay present with them. Pulsing in the hands shifting into warmth. Pressure in the thighs shifting into lightness. Softness at the shoulders shifting into coolness. We may also see that the feeling tone associated with a particular body sensation may change, while the actual sensation remain there for longer. For example, a pleasant tingling in the hands may shift into a neutral tingling in the hands as we simply notice the unfolding of our experience. So although being mindful with Vedana can support us in not adding more darts, not adding additional layers of suffering on top of pain, we can actually practice with any level of reactivity that's already occurring in our hearts' minds. So often we don't get to to stay with the first level of the first dart, there are often many darts that we have to work with. So we can know Vedana with any of the additional darts that may have been shot. And it doesn't matter how many of them we're dealing with. So earlier on, I gave an example of an initial dart being the hearing of an unpleasant sound, followed by many additional darts, with the last one being feeling hopeless about my practice. So when we become aware of this last dart, it's actually a perfect opportunity for us to practice right there. We can ask ourselves, what is the Vedana of this experience of feeling hopeless about my practice? And then we might notice, oh, this is unpleasant. This is how unpleasantness feels at the mind door with the thought, I am hopeless at this practice. And as we bring this mindful knowing of Vedana to any level of suffering in the mind, in that moment, it's an opportunity for us to step out of the reactivity and into mindful, non-judgmental knowing of experience once again. The Buddha made a distinction between what he called worldly and unworldly Vedana. And in this talk, we have mostly focused on the worldly Vedana, which often triggers these reactive patterns of craving, aversion, and boredom, which is why they're not considered forward leading. The unworldly Vedana are those associated with our path. For example, pleasant Vedana associated with the bliss of blamelessness, or pleasant feelings associated with our concentration or our metta practice. These types of Vedana are said to be forward leading. They arise based on a letting go of sensual desire, and they are associated with the wholesome wish for deeper happiness, deeper peace, deeper freedom. So the knowing of these unworldly, pleasant feelings support further letting go into the path. When they arise, it's okay to fully know them with mindfulness and to enjoy them. We're actually encouraged to do so by the Buddha. Being mindful with unworldly, pleasant Vedana is also self-correcting. So as we have explored, sukha, this sweetness, this contentment arise out of a letting go, and if we cling to sukha, it will vanish. So it's in this way that it's a self-correcting experience. Pleasant unworldly Vedana arise from a letting go, and they vanish from a holding on. So we can't actually cling to them. There can also be unpleasant unworldly Vedana associated with this path. The sting of remorse telling us that we're breaking sila can be associated with unworldly, unpleasant Vedana. Or the inner calling of samvega, the deep wish to be free, can be associated with unworldly, unpleasant Vedana. A form of deep longing, deep desire for freedom that can have an unpleasant yearning quality associated with it. And then there's also neutral unworldly Vedana, deep equanimity associated with unworldly neutral feeling tone at the mind door. In the release of reactivity, the mind is no longer in the push and pull for or against experiences. It simply rests in the middle. The peaceful state of neutrality that can arise during our practice points to the potential of the liberated mind, the mind that is totally still, permanently free from the pulling forces of greed, hatred, and delusion. When we learn to appreciate these temporary experiences arising in our practice of resting in the middle, they can become a new reference point for us that can further guide our practice and lead us in the right direction. So one metaphor that can illustrate mindfulness of Vedana is the image of learning to surf the waves of the ocean. When we learn to surf, which I've never done, but I have some sense of what that might entail, we have to stay intimately connected with our bodies, the board that we're surfing on, and the sense of the moving water. This is the only way that we can learn to stay balanced and be responsive to the shifts and the changes in the water without getting pulled under. If we start to think too much about what we're doing, we will likely lose our balance and fall off the surfboard. And then we have to start all over again. So there's this needing to stay connected to the board, to the body, and to the shifts and changes of the water. So being mindful with Vedana, the shifting, changing, arising, and passing quality of Vedana can be just like surfing our experience with mindfulness. And just like surfing the waves, the mindfulness we apply is not a dry or a distant knowing of our experience. Rather, as Marcia was talking about yesterday, it's a deeply intimate and heartful knowing of all that is felt from moment to moment to moment, both being fully in the experience as it happens, while also knowing it with mindfulness at the same time. Another metaphor that might illustrate this relationship with experience is the image of an old-fashioned record player. Most of you are probably old enough to know this experience. So the needle on the record player has to stay intimately connected within the groove of the record track to play the music. So it moves and it vibrates with all the little changes and bumps of the track being both in the groove while also allowing for the sound to be known. So can we also in this way be fully in our experience rather than being beside it, below it, above it, like we often are, knowing it with intimacy, knowing it with mindfulness. So what often happens in life is that we often have this distance between ourselves and our intimate knowing of life. For example, when I see a seal and my eyes start searching for more seals, I am actually missing the moment I'm in. The wanting for more seals becomes a barrier between the direct being in life and the sense of I needing something other to happen than what's actually here. The wanting, the aversion, the tuning out creates an illusory distance between ourselves and the world. And the barrier that is created is this sense of I and other. Me here, the world out there. So what would it be like if we could serve our Vedanas more rather than habitually react to them? Walking along the ocean, seeing a seal, there might be a wave of the arising of pleasant, coming to a peak, and then fading into neutral. And intimately seeing the wave of Vedana arise and disappear, there might be a direct knowing of the impermanent, unsatisfactory, and conditioned nature of sense door experience. And in that seeing, the heart might release some habitual wish for lasting sense door satisfaction. And in that release, the heart might reopen to life in another way, opening to the deep fragility and the deep preciousness of life, opening fully to all that is really beautiful here, a seal, a flower, a warm touch, a smile, but not holding on to it, trying to make it solid, letting it fully in and letting it fully go. So as an ending, I would like to end this talk tonight with a poem illustrating this deep intimacy with life, and it's called Hokusai Says by Roger Keyes. Hokusai says, look carefully. He says, pay attention, notice. He says, keep looking, stay curious. He says, there is no end to seeing. He says, look forward to getting old. He says, keep changing. You just get more of who you really are. He says, get stuck, accept it, repeat yourself as long as it's interesting. He says, keep doing what you love. He says, keep praying. He says, every one of us is a child. Every one of us is ancient. Every one of us has a body. He says, every one of us is frightened. He says, every one of us has to find a way to live with fear. He says, everything is alive. Shells, buildings, people, fish, mountains, trees. Wood is alive. Water is alive. Everything has its own life. Everything lives inside of us. He says, live with the world inside of you. He says, it doesn't matter if you draw or write a book. It doesn't matter if you saw wood or catch a fish. It doesn't matter if you sit at home and stare at the ants on your veranda, or the shadows in the trees, or the grasses in the garden. It matters that you care. It matters that you feel. It matters that you notice. It matters that life lives through you. Contentment is life living through you. Joy is life living through you. Satisfaction and strength is life living through you. He says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Love, feel, let life take you by the hand. Let life live through you. So we'll take a moment and sit together. Thank you for listening to the Dhamma. So we'll chant the blessings, sharing our blessings chant together. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guide of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachment quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all of these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.